Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, February 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Today on the show, licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy is back in the studio to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management and joins us to offer his expertise. Always a popular show when Darren is here. Call early. That's my advice. 800-348-2551, the number, 1-800-348-2551. Or if you want, you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, your home improvement calls, coming up on Vox Pop right after this news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. And when we do that, we welcome Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He is a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm. He is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. If you have a question, this guy might have the answer. Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also, of course, email us at voxpop@wamc.org. But our number, once again, is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Ray.
Anything new? You sell that little house yet?
We're not selling it. We took advantage of a state and federal tax credit, which requires us to hold ownership for 5 years.
Yeah. So you can't flip it.
Can't flip it.
And how much is it worth, you think?
Not as much as
you put
the money we put into it.
Well, that's not a good business proposition.
Well, you know, we're going to hold on to it and we're going to rent it out. And, you know, over time, over a long haul,
yeah,
it should be a financially viable project for us.
But, for those who have not heard you on this program before, this was a house, a very small house in Glens Falls, right?
City of Glens Falls.
And it was near falling down.
That's correct.
And you guys at West Branch completely redid the house, but it had to be according to, there were some rules because it was a historic site, right?
Well, it was listed on the National Register of Historic Places, which enabled us to apply for a state and federal tax credit. In order to utilize those tax credits, you have to abide by a set of guidelines for historic preservation. The house was condemned. The city of Glens Falls had solicited bids to tear it down. They'd received bids ranging from $20,000 to $70,000.
Just to tear it down?
Just to tear it down. It's a tiny little house. It's not quite 800 square feet total on both floors.
Ah.
400 square feet per floor.
Right.
And my wife and I caught wind of this, and at the 11th hour, we made a pitch to the city and somehow persuaded them to sell it to us for a dollar.
And, of course, you've done a lot of work.
Right, which was, I mean, it sounds like a great deal, but it was actually a negative asset.
Right.
So.
Well, good for you. And someday I'll be up there and I'll check it out.
Oh, please do. Yeah. It's rented out. Let us you can drive by and take a look. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's rented out.
Sure. Then I won't check it out.
Well, you can check it out by driving by. It's cute to see from the road.
All right, will do. Darren Tracy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement today. We go to Jesse and Troy. Jesse, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I'm in the middle of doing a bathroom remodel, and I'm putting down some rolled vinyl flooring, and I have a radiator in the room. And I really don't want to have to disconnect this thing. Is there any way to kind of pry it up off the floor and slide the vinyl under, or am I just going to have to bite the bullet and drain the system and take this thing out?
You could try lifting the radiator up, and somehow you need to keep it suspended, so you'd need to set up basically a beam to support it. But there's another way, too, Jesse. You could make a template out of paper and slice on that piece of paper out horizontally or perpendicular from the wall in line with each leg, and then cut holes for each of the four legs in your template, and then place that template on your vinyl and cut those holes and make that slice and work it around the legs.
That
and,
seems easier said than done.
It takes a little bit of skill. I mean, flooring guys can do that type of work.
Right. What do you think, Jesse? You got the chops to do this?
Yeah, you know, maybe I'm thinking about try prying it up first. I wasn't sure if I was, you know, likely to damage something by trying that. That seems easier, and if that doesn't work, then I'll try that templating technique.
Right. The vinyl floor is typically thin, so you could probably pry that up some. You don't want to pry it up too much so that you strain your piping, but give it a shot. If it doesn't work, you can try the alternative method that I suggested, and you can try it with a couple of different templates to get as close as possible before you actually cut your vinyl sheet goods.
It might be tough in a bathroom to set up a beam to hold the thing up.
Right. Yeah, but you could be possibly working under one side then the other. Where there's a will, there's a way.
Yeah.
All right, good luck.
Hey, thanks for the advice.
You're welcome.
Good luck, Jesse. 800-348-2551, the telephone number. Darren Tracy is with us today. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. Sean is in Spencer, Massachusetts. Sean, you're on.
Good morning. Good afternoon, guys. Thank you for taking my call. Quick question, then I'm going to hang up to listen because I am driving in Massachusetts and the law did change.
It's a new law. That's right.
Here's my quick question. When I turn my cold water faucet on, I have hot water come out first, and it comes out for a little bit of time, and then it gets cold. So perhaps I could get some advice on what I need to do or what the problem is. Thanks, and thanks for taking the call, and I'll listen to the answer.
All right, Sean, thanks a lot.
Okay, Sean, I don't think that there's much you can do to solve that problem easily. What's going on is that your cold water pipe is next to your hot water pipe, and it's probably copper. Copper conducts heat very readily, and so it's the warm copper pipe is heating up your cold copper pipe, so there's a segment of water in your pipe that heats up. So
okay.
that's what's happening, and just no easy solution. As I said, just run it for a few seconds to shed that hot water, and That's what you have to live with.
How long do pipes last? You know, not the newfangled pipes, but the old-fashioned pipes that many people have in their homes.
Okay, copper pipes last a long time without corroding. Before copper, commonly used were iron pipes, and they react with water and clog up.
Yeah.
And I've seen one-inch iron pipes just totally corroded on the inside, plugging everything up. So, you know, that's not good. Maybe 75 years, depending upon the chemical makeup of the water of some of those iron pipes. But iron pipe is not typically used these days. It's copper.
When did iron get phased out?
Maybe for water, for potable water, 75 years ago.
Okay, so it's been a while.
Yeah.
Darren Tracy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Home maintenance, repair, and improvement on the program today. We welcome your calls. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Vox Pop, home maintenance, repair, and improvement today with Darren Tracy. I'm Ray Graff. The number is 800-348-2551. Darren, a couple of emails here, and then we'll get back to the phones. You do want to mention this very nice nonprofit thing that you guys do.
Yes, I volunteer with Capital District Society, the New York State Society of Professional Engineers.
Right.
And one of our missions is to provide scholarships for high school seniors who are going to pursue the engineering field in college. And I would encourage anybody interested in applying for that scholarship money to reach out to our website. And again, that's New York State Society of Professional Engineers, the Capital District chapter. You can Google that, or you can reach me at my email, Darren@westbranchinc.com, and I will put you in touch with that application.
Very cool.
And also, I'd like to say engineering is not for everybody. There's other occupations out there associated with construction and building, the building trades. I'm an example of a person like that. I was not ready for engineering when I graduated from high school.
Yeah.
It took me a while to calm down and
and you did, though.
Get some rambunction out of my system and go back to school and become an engineer. But there are great opportunities to make a living out there in building trades, and we need tradespersons in this world, and plenty of opportunities to become a business owner in the trades, too. And you can make a lot of money as a business owner, more than you can as an engineer. Not that I'm suggesting that money is a goal that somebody should have, their main goal, but you know, as we all know, it takes a lot of money to live.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if you have a family, those kids just gobble up those $100 bills. It's like flushing them down
a
toilet.
Tell me about it. This email came in from Eric. Eric writes, "We have an old 1860s home with two bedrooms and the upstairs attic space. Currently, there are windows on the east and west walls, but because of the slope of the roof, there are no windows on the north or south walls. We'd like to get a little more light in there. How much vertical wall space does one need to add some low, small, sliding, or transom windows?"
Yeah, I'm not really following that. I guess there's some sort of a vertical wall in the attic that would allow to put a window, and you really only need as much room as what would allow you to install some framing and insert the window. And you can have custom window sizes made, so it could be small. Another option is to install a dormer. And you'll see that in a cape-style house.
Yeah.
And, that's a good way to bring light into a home.
All right. This one is from Heather in Loudonville. "I have a basement under my kitchen. It's about 10 feet by 15 feet. Some point, someone put jack posts under the joists near the refrigerator and the range. There's no indication of any stress or damage to the joists. Recently, one of the jack posts failed due to rust. The house was built in 1945. Does this sound like something to be looked at? And if so, by whom?"
Yes, you should replace that rusted jack post, or often called a lolly column.
Lolly column.
Right. Right. And they do rust out. A competent contractor could help you out with that. I don't think you need to get an engineer involved unless the beam is rotted itself. So,
all right.
Competent contractor should replace that steel column with the new lally column.
And then we had one email here from Judith, who is weighing in on the caller who had problem with the hot water. Judith said, "Couldn't the caller who had the hot water in his cold water pipe just insulate either or both pipes?"
Sure, he could, but it's probably in an area, or I'm thinking it's in an area that's not very accessible.
Yeah.
And they're touching one another, but yes, you could insulate those. And insulating the pipes is a good idea for energy efficiency, one, and also in the summertime, the cold water pipe will condense because of the warm air hitting the cooler pipe.
Yeah.
And it cools and condenses and it become a moisture problem. All that water could
drip
onto a wood floor and rot the wood. So, yes,
sure.
It's not a bad idea to insulate both the cold and hot water pipes that are accessible.
Darren Tracy is our guest. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement today on the program. The number is 800-348-2551. Sharon in Troy. Sharon, you're on.
Hey, my question is, I have a small cape, and we've had a salt system in to get rid of the minerals out of the water. It's failing, and I just don't really feel comfortable using it, and I was wondering if you had any suggestions on filtration for minerals. I also have iron. I think that makes a difference a little bit. It's not massive, but it does leave like a pink residue on like shower curving and stuff, so.
Okay, well, water chemistry can run the gamut. There are really all different types of water problems, depending upon the area that you're in. There are companies out there that will come and analyze your water free of charge. Culligan is one. I'm not endorsing them,
right.
But there are companies like that.
No, yeah.
And it's not inexpensive, but you know, I know that we own a property.
So you
that
can't
has,
tell me a particular brand that you like.
We try to stay away from that in general.
Yeah, darn.
But if you could recommend two, then I think we could probably get away with it.
There you go. Cool. Thanks,
well,
Ray.
You really need to analyze the water because it's not like one system
right.
fits all. You could have a sulfur problem.
Right.
You could have a water hardness problem. You could have an iron problem, or you could have a combination of all those. So you really need somebody to analyze the water chemistry.
Now, if you took a sample of water yourself, is that something you could bring to the cooperative extension? In other words, they'll do soil testing and things like that.
Yeah, the pH on soil. I'm not sure that they would analyze that. But there are water testing companies out there. Often they're used to test the potability of water.
Yeah. Can you get your own kit and do it?
I'm not sure to answer that question. I typically use
a
testing agency.
Are there any companies that you like if
for testing.
You're installing systems in homes that you're designing or building? Are there like two that are your go-to that?
Well, I mentioned one that just comes to the top of my head, the Culligan company.
Sure.
There are other companies out there. Depending upon the geographic area that you're in. But really, the takeaway from this is that you need to analyze the water chemistry before you make a decision on what type of equipment
we have done
to bring
that.
In. Okay. Okay. So,
I don't remember the exact details.
Okay.
Okay.
I just was wondering if those different aggregates and different layers and where you have a couple of different tubes that filtrate the water.
You mean like the reverse osmosis and other things?
Are a safer bet than salt or, I don't know.
Well, I'm not sure that what you're describing is a reverse osmosis
Ray referred. No, it's more of those big giant tubes.
Right.
Not for like just your drinking water, it's for the whole house.
Ah, yeah.
Okay. Well, typically, if you'll have iron in your water, you'll have a chlorine injection system. A little tiny pump that mixes chlorine in with your water, and then it will go into a holding tank, and that will oxidize the iron out of your water, and routinely you'll have to flush that tank out. And then to get the chlorine out of your water, you'll have another a carbon filter that the water will run through. So that's another piece of equipment. And you mentioned salt. Salt is used to treat the hardness of a water.
Yeah.
So something separate from the iron. And the hardness of water has to do with the mineral content of the water. And if you have very hard water, you can build up deposits in your dishwasher, your fixtures, and sometimes really bad. In the matter of a couple of years, you'll have to replace water fixtures
pipes,
and toilets,
right?
So it's actually cost effective to install a water softener.
Okay.
So that's a short story.
And how about does the water softener, does the salt damage the copper pipes? That was my other question. If I didn't switch over and pay the $5,000 or $8,000 for the aggregate type system, is the salt ruining
the pipes.
It shouldn't hurt your copper pipes.
Pipe.
Yeah, it should not hurt your copper pipes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Sharon, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. 1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today, and Maureen is in Catskill. Maureen.
Hi, I'm calling for the gentleman who had the warm water coming out of his hot water faucet. Had the hot water coming out of his cold water faucet. If he has a UV system on his water, that will cause it to happen. In fact, the water is quite warm.
Ah, okay. Well, that's good to know.
Thank you,
Maureen. We appreciate it. Over to Rich in Whitesboro. Rich, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I had a question about cold air returns. My cellar is partially livable. We go spend time down there, and we run some heat in there. But they say you're supposed to have equal amount of air returning to your furnace as going out. And but they also say don't take your cold air return from the cellar because it's not too healthy. So how do you handle that conundrum?
To be honest, I really haven't encountered that problem before. I would say, I think I'll just pass on this. Right,
force hot air into a basement.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
return.
The idea is you have a return to take the air back from the supply, and you want to equalize that, as the gentleman said. But then, yes, in the basement, you could have some damp, moist air where that might not be a good idea. You may not want to mix that in your system. So I really don't know how you would overcome that easily.
All right, Rich, I'm sorry about that one. 800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy is the guest, and Fred is in where? Fred. Hello.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. Good afternoon.
Okay, I've got an 1880 a house from 1880. It's pretty well built, about a 9-room house. Mostly small rooms, but the biggest ones are like 15 by 15. And it's got, like a rubble stone foundation, but a concrete floor in the basement. It's got wood posts in the basement to hold up the beams. And but I've noticed over the past 15 years since I moved in here, there's been quite a bit of sagging here and there, like one of the middle rooms on the first floor. The door is no longer closed properly. The door jams are kind of tilted, so I've had to shim off part of the door to get the doors to close. And, cracks here and there in the plaster walls in various rooms. But the biggest cracks were on the second floor, another middle room. There's actually a whole gap along one side of the wall where the wall meets the ceiling. It's about a 1-inch gap where the wall is pulled down away from the ceiling. And so where do you start trying to figure out where the sag is coming from, or whether it's, the basement is sinking or just maybe too much weight in the middle, in the upstairs rooms, bringing everything down. How do you start figuring out where the sag is coming from? Is that a common problem where houses kind of sag toward the middle, older houses?
It is a common problem with older houses. Typically, older houses are structurally undersized. People talk about, they don't build them like they used to anymore. And I'm saying, thank God that they don't build them like they used to anymore in terms of structure.
Yeah.
And that's a generalization. Back in the 1880s and in days gone by, there was a lot of really great craftsmanship in finish work. Mm-hmm. But in terms of structural sizing, often older buildings are undersized. So you would start out by tracing the load path down from the rafters and the floors and understand and analyze what beams are carrying what loads. But typically you would want to add some lally columns, as we talked about in a previous caller, because the beam spans between posts are too great for the size of the beam. Mm-hmm. So you can just go mid-span and add a lally column, and there a screw assembly on the bottom so that you can slowly tighten those up and maybe raise the beam up a little bit over time. And
so you're saying lally columns added to the basement or the first floor or the second
floor
basement, or all three?
No, for the basement.
Some of those original wood posts are a little bit rotted on the bottom.
That's typical. Yeah, that's because there's moisture in the basement, and the wood is often not locust or cedar that's rot resistant. So over time, that rots. And that causes the settling. So what you can do is you can jack that up and take the load off, and saw the bottom of that wood column off, flush where it's dry, and then you put a concrete block or a series of concrete blocks, 8 by 16 by 4 inches thick, maybe 2 wide, and then on top of that concrete block you place a piece of black polyethylene, and that stops the moisture from wicking up through the concrete floor, and it separates the concrete block from the wood, and you won't have that problem in the future. So that's another type of repair in lieu of using the lally columns.
Yeah, the walls do leak water when it rains a lot, too, so that's part of the problem, I'm sure. Well, you're right about the finish work being nice. It's got, the nice stairway and, trim work and everything, but probably wasn't made for handling a lot of weight, All right, well, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Fred. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Darren Tracy is our guest today. And Ken, You're in Catskill, and you're on the air.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. I'm a homeowner, but I have skills, so about 5-6 years ago, I put a translucent polycarbonate panel extension on an overhang, and used, you know, I went with the directions that came with the thing, used the rubber grommeted roof screws, and I never had a leak, never had a problem with it. And to this day, still don't have a problem with it. And now it's 5-6 years later. 2 years ago, I built a 20-by-20-foot screen porch, all to code, and things rock solid. And I bought a competitor's polycarbonate panels, about 12-foot lengths, and cut them to size, and laid them up on the roof and used all the same exact techniques, but had a crazy time in the last year and a half, continually needing to caulk drips from quite a few of the holes that were drilled. These, I think they were 1/8-inch holes that were pre-drilled before I put the screws in. And I have not been able to figure out why one company's material would seem to be defective. So much so, by the way, I remember I bought 22 panels. They would not give me my money back. That not the box store where I bought it, but the company itself. They said that they would send me a whole shipment, including the screws, to replace what I had put up there. Now, you can imagine how much labor went into this thing. And by the time I was so infuriated that I called them about it, I basically had solved the problem with putting, ready for this, pails everywhere, these little pails. And it worked great, and then I ended up putting a gutter underneath everything, and now that worked really, really well. I did that about 6-7 months ago. But to my question, I could never figure out why, using the same technique and essentially the same kind of panels, why one would work flawlessly and the other would just didn't work out at all, really, until I fixed the problem. Okay. And so that's the question.
Well, the first thing that comes to my mind is that it may not be the panel. It may be the rubber grommet of the fastener that you used. Did you use the same fasteners or different fasteners?
Well, these are boxed screws that come with the panels, or that's one of the products that they sell when you buy the panels.
Right.
So if you're right about that, I was unable to. I didn't have the original ones to compare them. So yeah. You may be right about that. But what you're thinking, that they may have been dry or something?
Well, they may not have been thick enough or a different quality of material. I'm thinking it might be more the grommet than it would be the polycarbonate material. Yeah. You could try getting extra washers or replace the washer in each screw.
Let me tell you this. I was able to lay all these panels up there, which is pretty high ceiling, because I did them repetitively from one end to the other. So my ladders were in between them as I went along. But afterwards, after it was all up and I realized that they were beginning to leak when it got to be the fall and it was raining occasionally, the idea of climbing onto that roof didn't appeal to me because, right, after all, this was not a regular roof.
Let me ask you, Ken, did you install these fasteners in the peak or the valley of the roof panel?
I installed them in multiple ways along the purlings, is that what they called it, run across,
right,
the other way?
Purlin support.
Perpendicular.
Support.
Yeah.
But typically, manufacturers
exactly
would. Typically, manufacturers will want you to install the fasteners, the rubber grommeted fasteners, in the valley of the roofing panel,
right,
and not the peak or the tall part,
why?
Which might be counterproductive.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Because that's where the water runs down through. But I guess it makes a tighter seal. It tends to flex less. Whereas if you install it in the hat part of the channel, it can flex and leak. So that might be another place where you're getting leaks if you installed on the
right. Well, to answer your question, though, they were installed in the valleys.
Okay.
They definitely were.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I get from what you're saying, it may point to those grommets. I mean, now it's after the fact because I solved the water problem with all kinds of Rube Goldberg type.
Well, the water's still getting in, and it's going to rot your wood purlin. So, It would be good to stop that water from getting in.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry to hear you say that.
I'm sorry that we had to tell you, but we have to take a break here, Ken. I apologize. The number is 800-348-2551. It's Darren Tracy Day today on Vox Pop. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Vox Pop. 800-348-2551 is the number. Every call we get on this program, I run through my head. Darren says, "What's wrong?" And I'm staring into space going, "Oh, yeah, I got to fix that. Oh, I got to fix that in my house, too. Oh, yeah, this one, too." So it's not the program, Darren. It's just it fills me with stress every time we do the program. 800-348-2551. And, you know, the difference between you and me, you know how to fix stuff. I don't know how to fix jack squat.
Well, I don't believe that.
Oh, really? Oh, come on. You've been over.
You're a smart guy.
Two emails here, and then back to the phones for the home stretch. This one is from JC. My house was recently elevated 10 feet. It's an 1880 white farmhouse. Now, there are decks and stairs with a lot of balusters. I'd like to have this blend in more. I've never had success using even the best stains that cost $75 a gallon. The UV from the sun destroys it within a few years. I'd like it to be white. Is it better to use paint rather than opaque stain? And that is from JC.
Okay, I'm not really following that question. He said the building was elevated 10 feet.
It was elevated 10 feet. Yes, it's an 1880 farmhouse. It is white. He'd like it to stay white and never had success using even the best stains. What's better, paint or stain?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that ties into having it elevated, but I will say I've had best luck with oil base primer, paint primer, oil base. And coat all six sides of every board that you put on, if you're installing it or if it's already installed.
Well, if it was built in 1880, it was probably already installed.
Yeah, but he said he jacked it up 10 feet, so there might be some new wood exposed.
Decks
but,
and stairs, yeah.
Preparation with painting is key. You've got to get the old material off as much as you can. And then if you get down to bare wood, you want to prime with an oil base paint.
Like Kills or something, one of those things?
Not necessarily Kills. Some of the Kills products are limited to interior.
Yeah.
Some of those are alcohol-based. But a good oil base primer on bare wood, and then two coats of latex on top of that. So it's three coats.
Yeah.
Three-coat system, and that will provide the best service for your labor.
All right, this one is from Andrew, and then we'll get back to the phones for the home stretch. This is saying, what type of wall assembly would you use to insulate a double-wide load-bearing brick wall? Insulation needs to be located on the interior rather than the exterior.
Depending on the circumstances, you could use a rigid insulation, polyisocyanurate, or extruded polystyrene board. You can install some wood lath, attach that wood lath to the existing masonry wall, and then attach the styrofoam boards to that. That's one method. You could also frame out a wall using conventional 2x4 framing and insulate with a mineral wool, Roxel product.
What would you do if it was your house?
Probably, if I had the room, I would frame it out with pressure-treated lumber, or maybe use both. If this is going to be a finished basement, and I want to gain as much R value as possible, use the 2-inch rigid in addition to framing, and then the Roxel insulation.
Darren Tracy is our guest. The number is 800-348-2551. Mo in Springfield. Hello, Mo.
Hello there.
You're on.
Yeah, my question is, I imagine with the renovations you've done, you've replaced some water piping.
Correct.
Have you used any of, like, the shark bite type connectors and the plastic tubing or anything like that?
Yes. I'm an older school guy, and I'm actually more adept at copper piping and sweat fitting.
Yeah.
But that's not used that much anymore. I would say like 95% or maybe greater of all repairs and new piping for potable water systems use plastic piping PEX fittings. And you can use those Shark Bite, which are a type of a push-on fitting with either copper or PEX, and they really save a lot of labor. There's no copper sweating, soldering to do.
Yeah.
You just push them on, and you're good to go. Some people say that they're not code approved. I checked into that with the International Code Council, who's a governing body of all the codes throughout the states. Each state individually adopts their own code, but basically it's through the International Code Council.
Yeah.
And shark bite fittings, push-on fittings are acceptable.
That's a common question on this program. Thanks, Mo. 800-348-2551 comes up at least once a show. Are the shark bites okay? And it seems to be.
Oh, have you ever used those?
No.
You just push them on and you're good to go.
Really?
It's really a labor saver. They're a little bit pricey, but they save a lot on the labor.
Let's go to Kathleen in the Berkshires. Kathleen, you're on.
Hi, yes, thank you. Another water in the basement question.
Hooray.
I've always had a sump pump, and it's always taken care of it. And a year ago, last September, 2018, we had a lot of rain. And I had water coming in where it wasn't taken care of by the sump pump. I'm thinking it's probably the gutters outside, but I'm having the roof done this year, so the gutters will take care of it, hopefully, but could it be from other reasons?
Oh, absolutely. One of the main...
Oh, great.
Yeah. You mentioned gutters. You can have gutters that get clogged up and leak, and all the water comes off your gutter and lands adjacent to your foundation. And where does it go? Particularly this time of year, often the ground is frozen, except right next to your foundation, because heat from your basement leaks out and thaws the ground adjacent to your foundation. So the water that comes off the gutter can go straight down and hang around your basement.
I think that's what it is.
Right. So gutters are helpful. And also, once we get to warmer weather here, you can take a look at your grades around the perimeter of your house, and you want to pitch the grades away.
That's an issue, too. I've heard you say always
put it to the east, right? That's a huge problem. And I've seen people landscape, and they'll put all sorts of wood chips there and create dams
around the foundation. So who would foundation people do that kind of work?
No, that's more of a landscaper, handyman type project.
Okay, that part of it.
Right.
About 15 years ago, there was water coming in certain areas, and someone used a machine and put like plugs in different all around the foundation.
Okay.
From the inside.
Okay.
Have you ever heard of that?
I have. Do you have a concrete foundation or a rubble foundation?
I do. It's a ranch house built in the late 50s.
Yeah. Actually, our construction company used to do that years ago.
I think this guy used to work for a company that did it, and he happened to have a machine and came and did it, and that seemed to do it until almost 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
Mm, right. It's called epoxy injection.
And I think there's one area where he wasn't able to do that because a room had been built. So he didn't want to take all the sheetrock down and start putting plugs in that wall. So it might be that could be still the problem, but just in that one area.
Yeah. That method of keeping water out of your basement doesn't always work, and it's expensive. The best way to prevent water from getting in your basement is to divert the water away from your foundation walls.
Okay. Kathleen, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551, the number. Darren Tracy is our guest today. Tom and Latham, you're on.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a 10-by-10-foot patio attached to the house. And there is a 3-foot wall at the far end away from the house. I intend ledger board from the house and set posts to carry it on the wall. And I'm just wondering what kind of post you would use and how you would attach them to the wall. The wall, it has a blue stone cover on it right now.
Yeah, I'm not following you.
What's just, a pergola?
Well, pergolas is a structure with a roof and then posts. It's open.
Oh, yeah.
And
we call it an overhang.
Yeah, well, it can be just rafters and no sheathing on top. Is that what you're envisioning, Tom? Is that where you're going to build?
Correct, yeah. Correct. And what my concern is when I set the posts on the bluestone out to carry that, I want to know how or what to set the posts on or how to attach them to bluestone so, A, they don't move, but, B, so they don't soak up water and eventually rot.
Right. Well, you'd use a type of wood that it's not going to rot, either pressure-treated or a naturally rot-resistant wood like cedar or locust. Cedar is popular and common and readily available. I think it's really important to make the connections at the top of your pergola rigid and diagonal braces so that you're not having a racking effect to your structure, and that will go a long ways to making your structure stable. And where your posts intersect with your stone, you could use metal clips, L-shaped clips, fasten them to the base of your column, your wood column, and also fasten them to your stone. To attach to the stone, you drill with a hammer drill bit and an anchor. And that L-shaped bracket, you'd want to make sure that that's hot-dip galvanized, not just electroplate galvanized. And the difference between those two is significant. Hot-dip galvanized is more expensive, but it's dropped into a vat of zinc, and they run electrical charge through it, and it bonds to the metal versus an electroplate coating. So those are a couple tips. And also I'll mention, I can't answer all these questions in detail the way I want.
Right.
With the amount of time that we have.
Yep.
And I do take questions after the show. If people want to contact me, they can reach me at my email, which is Darren@westbranchinc.com. Or they can
spell Darren
Darren at West WestBranchInc.com, or they can go on the net and look at my website, West Branch Engineering, or Facebook. If you're a Facebook person, I do have some interesting things on my Facebook page.
Yeah, you can see the little house.
Yeah, you can see the little house and other tips, West Branch Engineering and Consulting. And I do have some tips on there that pertain to some of the matters that were brought up today on the show.
And you'll just answer people's questions.
And I do.
It's very nice of you to do.
Every program, I'll get anywhere from half a dozen to a dozen. And as long as it doesn't take a lot of time, if somebody wants me to come out to their house, I'm not going to do that.
Right. Understood.
As a public service, but I will answer questions and people will send me pictures.
It's very nice of you. Let's go back to the phones, grab a couple of more here before we wrap up. We'll go to Kathy in Seward. Kathy, you're on.
Good afternoon, Ray and Darren. This is, I think it's in your purview. I have my own well, and I suddenly have been getting an odor in my cold water. Not the hot, just the cold water. When I first turn the water on, there's an aroma. It smells vaguely like sulfur, and then it goes away. And I don't understand why it goes away. I can understand that I would get it. It's a well, and maybe, there's... But why would it just be for a little while?
Hmm.
Well, it could volatilize, and, that explains why it goes away.
What does that mean?
Well, it's just the sulfur comes out of the water and evaporates, for lack of a better term.
Uh-huh.
And if it's not too strong, that could explain why you have it initially and goes away. Sometimes with hot water, you'll find that problem more because of the anode in the hot water tank. But Not
yeah,
so much
no, it doesn't happen with the hot water, only the cold.
Hmm. Yeah. You should have that tested. You should have your water tested because, especially a private well, you don't want to be drinking water that could make you sick.
Yeah,
so, and it's not expensive to have it tested.
Could it be something in the, I got a very small, not a big storage tank, pressure tank, it's a little unit. Could it be something in there that is making it smell?
Rather than the water itself? Could be. I'm not thinking that it would be making it smell of sulfur on the cold only.
Hmm.
Could be.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you'll have to have that tested. Kathy, thank you very much. We got to jump quickly over to Kerhonkson and Maria. Maria, you have a couple of minutes here.
Hi. So I have similar problems to the lady that just called. I have a well also, but I have sulfur water, but it stinks all the time. I do have some tank that backwashes, and my husband pours bleach so that it won't smell. But then after time, it smells again. It's black. He cleans the filter. We've been living there for 15 years. Is there anything that can be done besides what we're doing?
Well, you need to keep on top of those systems. I have, as I mentioned earlier, my wife and I own a property and have really difficult water problems.
Yeah.
And it's hard, has iron, and it has sulfur. And you have to treat each one of those problems differently with a different piece of equipment. And you have to maintain those items. You have to back flush them. Typically, you have to inject chlorine, and they use a peristaltic pump, which is a pump that has a little rubber tube, and rollers go around and squeeze that tube continuously, and that's how the chlorine is pumped. That rubber tube wears out, so there's a lot of maintenance on those systems. I wish I had an answer for you that was easy, but it's in simple and
right.
Not expensive, but there really isn't any.
It's
problematic.
And this is something that's not really going to go away. You just treat
typically,
it, right?
They do not. Those types of problems don't go away. They have in some cases. You might pick up a different vein of water down in the base of your drilled well, and your water can become better or it can become worse.
Okay. Maria, we'll have to leave it there. Regarding iron being magnetic, can you use some sort of a magnetic filtration system?
I haven't heard of those. I mean, typically...
Did I come up with an invention?
Yeah.
No?
Somebody would have probably have come up with that. Every time I have an idea for an invention, it's like, oh, this is going to be great. I search on the internet and somebody's already thought of it.
All right, Darren Tracy, we'll have to leave it there. Support comes from Bergeron Electrical Services for over 30 years, providing the Pioneer Valley in Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more. BergeronElectrical.net. George Propane, Goshen, Massachusetts, family-owned and operated for over 75 years, serving Western Massachusetts with propane and full-service heating and plumbing installation, services, and deliveries. GeorgePropane.com. Stavros, helping people with disabilities to work toward their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information. And Capital Roots, working year-round to provide nourishment, community, and sense of belonging for individuals who call the Capital Region home. CapitalRoots.org to learn more. Once again, thank you to Darren Tracy for stopping by today. Thank you to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered by Kayleen White. Our producers, Jim Lavoulis and Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we'll discuss African-American history with Mary Liz and Paul Stewart of the Underground Railroad History Project of the Capital Region. But right now, stand by for the book show.